Good morning. It's good to see you. You'll notice that there aren't any birds in here today. I think that's because the music on Thursday night's grad night killed them, honestly. It was so loud it even drove out the birds. But we've been in this series now for a number of weeks on the purpose-driven life, seven steps to the fulfilling and discovering and maintaining your life mission. Last week we were in part six, and we only got halfway through it, so I want to just finish that up today. The S in purpose stands for strengthen the skills, habits, and relationships I'll need to sustain my mission over the long haul. Now, you remember last week we looked at the skills and habits that help you maintain your life focus, your mission, your purpose in life. And today I want us to look at the relationships that help you maintain your focus, your purpose, your life mission. Pastor Tom read this verse, Ecclesiastes 4:9. Two can accomplish more than twice as much as one, for the results can be much better. The point here is that God made you for relationships. The very first thing that God said when he made man is, it is not good for man to be alone. You were made for relationships. Now, the whole sermon today is in one sentence, and it's this. So get this, and then you can go home. The quality of your life will be in direct proportion to the type of relationships you choose to build in your life. The quality of your life will be in direct proportion to the relationships you build in your life. And you must develop relationships that support your life mission, or you'll never be able to do it. There are four relationships you must develop if you're going to fulfill your life purpose. Let me give these to you. Number one, I need models that inspire me. I need models that inspire me. Number two, I need mentors that instruct me. Mentors are coaches, counselors, teachers. Mentors that instruct me. Models that inspire me. Number three, I need partners that assist me. Partners that assist me, co-workers, helpers, team members, so that I'm not in this job alone. And number four, I need friends that support me. Friends that support me. Now let's look at the first one, because this is one we often overlook. I need models that inspire me. Philippians 3:17, would you read this verse with me? Dear brothers, pattern your lives after mine, and notice who else lives up to my example. What Paul is saying here is, it's good to have models. It's good to have models in life that help us know where we're going. Circle the word pattern. How many of you women or men have ever sewn a garment and you used a pattern to sew with? Can I see your hands? Sure. Now, why did you use a pattern? Because it was easier. Because it saved time. It shortened the process. It reduced the number of mistakes. And all of those are benefits of having models for life or patterns for life, so that you just don't go through life trying to make it up as you go along. We learn faster and we learn better through example. Would you agree with that? Sure you do. Don't tell me how to do it. Show me how to do it. The quickest way to achieve your goals in life. Now get this. The quickest way to achieve your goals in life is to find a model who's already done it and copy them. Find somebody who's already where you want to be, spiritually, financially, emotionally, relationally, and find out all about them and how they did it. And it's the quickest way to move towards your life mission. Find the model. Look at this verse. Paul says, you became imitators of us and of the Lord. And so you became a model to all the believers. This is the process. He said, you follow an example, and then you become an example to other people. You see, it is human nature to imitate. That's the way we're made. In fact, as a baby, everything you learned by copying. Every single thing you learned as a child growing up, you learned by copying. Now, the problem with that is this. As a child, you didn't get to choose your models. Your models were simply those who were closest to you. And so, if you had a successful model, chances are you grew up to be a high achiever. On the other hand, if you had a negative model, you probably grew up with a negative attitude. If you saw anger modeled very vociferously, you probably grew up with a temper. Does this make sense? And so you it was kind of potluck on the models you had growing up. Some were good, some were bad. Fortunately, now as an adult, you can intentionally choose who your models are, and you can repattern and reprogram your mind. And Paul's saying, choose good models. You got a choice, good ones or bad ones. Choose ones that at least make an attempt to follow the Lord. It's human nature. Jesus taught this way. Jesus understood it. In fact, Jesus taught by modeling. Notice this verse. Jesus said, I've given you an example to follow. Do as I have done to you. He modeled. Now, there are two kinds of models you can have in life. You can have indirect models. That is, you read books about people, say, chosen outstanding people in your field. And you read books about them, or articles, or you listen to tapes or videos. And that's fine. I am a model to many pastors who've never met me simply because they get my tapes. And they're mailed all over 42 countries. And other people have been models for me as a pastor, that I've listened to their tapes and books and read. And so you can have an indirect... Do you know that every great leader in history has had a model? You know, we think about their greatness, but they had somebody that they were modeling after that got them started. George Patton's model, the famous general, was Alexander the Great. And he lived Alexander the Great. Martin Luther King's model for nonviolent resistance was Gandhi. Gandhi's model was Jesus Christ. He said so. And so there are models that we can learn from that help us move along more quickly. It's the fastest way to move toward your life mission. Find somebody who's already where you want to be, that are already seeing results in their lives, figure out what they're doing, and then do it too. Indirectly models or direct models. You can get personal contact with people. Now the benefit of models, the greatest benefit, is that they inspire us. They show that it can be done. They show it's possible. And you say, well, if they did it, I could do it too. And they challenge us to dream great dreams and to take risks and to move out of our comfort zone. And the models cause us to break through barriers that we thought were barriers. For years, everybody knew that scientifically, a human being could not run a mile faster than 4 minutes in a mile. That nobody could run that fast. It was scientifically proved no human being could run a mile in 4 minutes. Until one day, Roger Bannister did it. And he broke through the barrier. And within a year, about a dozen other people had done the same thing. We got people who run the 4 minute mile all the time. We got guys in our church. I talked to a guy last night who's run the mile 2 times under 4 minutes. Why? Because the model broke the barrier and it became easier. Does this make sense? So you look at people who are headed where you're headed and you start learning from them. Now let me ask you, who are your models? Who are your heroes? Who are the people you respect enough, spiritually or intellectually or relationally, to model your life after? You say, well, I don't have anybody like that. Then you're losing out. That's all I can say. I can't make it any clearer. It's your loss. Because there are people that you can learn from. You can learn from anybody if you just know the right questions. Now, the fact is, we say, well, there ain't anybody perfect out there. Well, of course there's nobody perfect out there. That doesn't mean they can't be a model. There is no perfect model except for Jesus Christ. But if you can't learn from other people, you got an ego problem. Just to cut through it all, if you can't learn from other people, you... Somebody liked that out there. If you can't learn from other people, you have an insecurity that says, well, I just have to figure it out all on my own. And you're going to go through life wasting time and energy and trying to learn lessons that you didn't have to learn in the first place because you could have learned them from somebody else. It's dumb to not have models. And it's a point of pride. Humility is saying, I can learn from anybody. Teach me. Whenever I see anybody doing anything good, good job at anything, I say, fantastic, keep on doing it. Now teach me how to do it too. How do you find a model? You look for somebody who's already where you want to be. Values, character. You might find somebody who's already gone through the stage of life you're about getting ready to go through. And they went through that stage of life successfully. And you just begin to find out what they did to do that. I need models that inspire me. Number two, To fulfill my mission in life, I need mentors that instruct me. And a mentor is a trusted friend, a counselor, a personal coach, a trainer. Mentors are the people God uses in your life to bring out the best in you. That's the purpose of a mentor. A personal coach. They bring out the best in you. The purpose of a mentor is to keep you growing. To keep you on track. For years, the church called them in the early church spiritual directors or disciplers. It's just somebody who's a coach, who's a trainer, who is committed to your growth, to your goals, not to help you with their goals, but to help you with their goals, your goals. They help you with your roles, your goals, and your soul. And they're involved in all of your life. Now notice these verses. Proverbs 15:22, let's read it together. Plans fail for lack of counsel, but with many advisors they succeed. Circle the word counsel and the word advisors. He's talking here about mentors. Now, no matter how successful you are or how successful you become, you're always going to need a coach. Michael Jordan's the most successful basketball player today. You think he's got a coach? You bet he does. Pavarotti could sing circles around any of us here. So could Beverly Sills. You think they have personal coaches? You bet. All the pros have coaches. That's why they're pros. And if you find successful people who are really sharpening their skill and they're not growing stodgy or stagnant because they've got a mentor. Even the President of the United States has coaches. We all need coaches. Doesn't matter how successful you are. We need outside opinion because we need a greater perspective. Notice this verse. Get all the advice you can and be wise the rest of your life. It says get all you can. You know, I've had 8 different mentors in life. I wrote them out yesterday. Who are the men who've been mentors in my life? Personally trained, personally discipled me. I've had 8 of them. And I started making a list of people that I use as my kind of chain of counsel and advisory people on major decisions and I learned from. And I made a list of about 50 people yesterday. 50 advisors who give me input. You see, I'm not smart enough to pastor this church, the size that it is. I just don't have enough wisdom to lead one of the larger churches in America. But I listen to people all the time, trying to get input, trying to get ideas, keeping an open ear. So people can say, you know, watch out for this, watch out for that, be careful about this. And that's one of the values. You need models that inspire you. You need mentors that instruct you. Now, how do you benefit from a mentor? A coach. Well, there are people all around you who could be your mentor. Just because you're smarter than them in one area doesn't mean you can't learn from them in another area. Does that make sense? They don't have to be good at everything to be a mentor. They have to be good at what you want to be good at. Everybody's ignorant just on different subjects. Okay? And you just need to find the people around you who know what you want to know and begin to ask questions. That's the first thing. You ask questions. Asking questions is the secret of drawing out the insights from the coaches, the mentors, the trainers, the counselors that are in your life. Notice this verse. Though good advice lies deep within a counselor's heart, the wise man will do what? Draw it out. Circle that phrase. Draw it out. How do you draw it out? By asking questions. And I would suggest that you develop a standard list of questions that you ask every time you get around a high achiever, or somebody who knows what you don't know, who has had experiences you haven't had, so you can draw it out. Just make a standard list and write it down, keep it in your little diary or memorize. I've got mine memorized. Every time I get around somebody I respect, I ask them the same old questions. What are the greatest decisions you've made in your life and how did they affect your life? What are the greatest mistakes you made and the failures and the things you learned from them? What are your greatest successes in life? How do you build relationships? How do you create? What books have made the greatest difference in your life? How do you manage your time? How do you handle stress? What do you do to relax? I ask these same questions anytime I get anywhere around somebody who's doing something with their lives. And you ought to know what those questions are so that you can draw it out. That is a mark of wisdom, the ability to draw it out of others. Everybody in this room knows something you don't know. And I could learn from every one of you if I just know the right questions to ask. I know some things you don't know. You know some things I don't know. But if we get together, we help each other out. I had a mentor a number of years ago who, he had a mentor earlier in life as an intern in a church in Texas. And he said he was in this church for about a year as an intern studying for the ministry. And at the end of that year, he went into the pastor's office, closed the door, and he said, "Now, I've been here a year, and I have never heard you preach a dud sermon. Every time you speak, it's interesting, it's lively, I never get bored." He said, "What is the secret of your freshness? What is the key to you always having something to say?" And he said, "I want to know your secret before I leave." And the man said, he's kind of humble guy, he said, I don't have any secret. Billy said, "Yes, you do. You have a secret, and I want to know what that secret is." The guy kind of hemmed and hawed around. He said, "I don't have any secret." Billy said, "You do too. And I'm not leaving here till you tell me what it is." The man said, "Well," he said, "you know, about 30 years ago, I made a commitment to the Lord that to stay fresh, I was going to read through the New Testament once a week." And he said, I've never missed a week." Billy said his jaw just kind of dropped. And he's trying to think up a smart question as a follow-up. He says, "Well, what translation do you read?" The guy said, "Well, I usually read it in the original Greek language." I mean, you know, the guy's brilliant. Now, Billy said, "I could have been there a year and watched that guy and walked out of there and never learned his secret. Counsel in the heart of man is like a deep well. A man of understanding will draw it out. You do it by asking questions. The other way you grow from a mentor, first, ask questions. Second, accept feedback." You accept feedback. You get somebody you trust. You get somebody you know loves you so that you listen to them, because feedback is absolutely essential to your life mission. If you start on your life mission, you don't have any feedback, you're going to get off course. It's like a moonshot. When NASA sends a rocket to the moon, it's always constantly getting off course because the moon's turning and the earth is turning. And so to stay on course, it constantly has to do course corrections every second or so to stay on track. And feedback is absolutely essential to your life mission. Notice these verses. "It's better to be criticized by a wise man than to be praised by a fool. It is a badge of honor to accept criticism." It helps you stay on track. Now, who do you choose as a mentor? I mean, if you don't have one right now, you don't have that coach, I would suggest you go out and find someone who has the values and the character you want. Or they have the knowledge and the skills and the experience that you need for your life mission and for your career and for your work in the world. But most of all, you find somebody that you trust. You value their insights so that when they do give you feedback, you listen to it and don't just shine it on. My dream for Saddleback Church is that one day we will have life mission mentors as a ministry in this church. But through the 401 class, that we will train people out of that class. Someone will come out and say, "I will be a life mission mentor to help people find and discover their life mission, get on it, and stay on it." Because studies today show about 50% of all the people in the workforce today are in the wrong job. They're not doing what they were shaped to do. And I can't think of anything next to coming to know Christ. The second greatest thing you can do is help people discover their life purpose and their mission. You know that the book of Titus tells older women to train younger women in the church. It says that the older women are to train the younger women. If you are a Christian, you've been a Christian for any length of time, you ought to be right now seriously looking for a younger believer in your same profession that you could help along. You say, "Well, I'm not perfect." You don't have to be perfect. You just have to be one step ahead. If you've been a Christian a little bit longer, you know just a little bit more, you can help another person in your profession. What does it mean to be a Christian salesman? What does it mean to be a Christian attorney? What does it mean to be a Christian truck driver? What does it mean to be a Christian nurse? and you begin to help others. And as you help others, you'll find that you grow yourself. You don't have to be perfect. You just have to be willing. I need models that inspire me. I need mentors that instruct me. The third thing you're going to need for your life mission is you need partners that assist you. Helpers, co-workers, teammates. You need a support group of people who are your network, and they're committed to a similar life mission as you. Now, let me just say this. If you've been with me all along in these 9 messages so far in this series, and you've been taking this serious, I mean, you've been trying to do the homework, and you've been trying to get your life organized and develop a life mission statement and clarify your values and look at your shape and set some goals and all the things we've talked about. You haven't just been coming and listening to it, but you've been trying to do it. I want to say to you, you are in very elite company. The atmosphere is very rare, because very few people in life ever really take the time to stop and think through, what am I going to do with my life? Very few people really write out a statement and goals and decide, what am I going to do with my life? What does God want me to do? So if you are doing that, you're not just listening to this stuff, but if you're really doing it, you are in the top 1% of the nation. That means you must actively seek out other people who want to grow with you, because you're in a class by yourself. And you need support. And the fact is, most of the people sitting around you aren't going to do what you're willing to do. So you have to actively seek out people who will support you in your life mission and help you grow. We read this verse a little bit earlier. 2 are better off than 1, because together they can work more effectively. If one falls down, the other can help him up. But if someone is alone, there's no one to help him. 2 men can resist an attack that would defeat 1 man alone. He's just saying here, we all need relationships. We need helpers. We need co-workers. We need people who are committed to the same goals that we're committed to. A network, a support group. Even Jesus, who was perfect, had 12 partners in his life mission. It says he chose them to be with him and to help him. Even Jesus recognized the need for association. He had 12 partners in his mission. They were called disciples. Paul had 9. You weren't meant to go through life fulfilling your life mission by yourself. I mean, even the Lone Ranger had Tonto. You need other people to help you out. Now, the truth is, God designed the church for this purpose. To be a support group, a network. Notice this verse. We are all parts of Christ's body, that's the church, and it takes every one of us to make it complete. For we each have different work to do. So we belong to each other, and each needs all the others. You see, no one is strong in every area. That's why we're more effective as a team. We compensate for each other's weaknesses. Now, when I use the word support group, most of you think of counseling or problems. And that is a valid reason for a support group, to take care of problems in the past or to deal with problems in the present. But a support group can be far more than just that. In addition to being a support through times of crisis and problems, a small group, a support group, can support you in your life mission. It's forward thinking. And the proper support group will help you reach your life mission goals much quicker. They help facilitate your life mission. They help you develop the habits and the skills we talked about last week. They keep you focused on your goals. They help you be accountable to what you want to accomplish in life. They encourage you to take risks when you have to step out of your comfort zone. A support group can be for the purpose of a life mission. Did you know that Ben Franklin formed a support group of very brilliant people, and he called it My Most Ingenious Friends Group. That's what it was called. My Most Ingenious Friends Group. And that group got together, and they would write papers and discuss them. They would discuss questions. They helped each other in their career goals and life goals. And that group met every Friday night for 40 years. If you want to know why Franklin was still accomplishing things in his 80s and 90s, his greatest inventions were after 70 years of age. Why? He had a support group around him that kept him growing. Do you? Do you know that Thomas Edison had a group, a support group he called My Mastermind Alliance? And he put people with a similar life mission together. And that group, in a six-year period, came up with over 300 patented inventions in 6 years. They were averaging one minor invention every 6 weeks and one major invention every 6 months. I am a part of three professional support groups for pastors. I have a group of pastors here in this area. We meet together, but we also just get on the phone and call each other, and we fax things to each other. I have a support group with other pastors in other states. And I'm a part of a support group of the pastors of the largest churches in America. And we get together once a year and hole ourselves up in a hotel for 3 days and just talk. And in the meantime, send letters and faxes and calls. Why? You need that kind of stimulation to fulfill the mission that God calls you to. Now let me ask you, who could help you reach your life purpose? Who could help you bring out the best in yourself? Who could help you develop your potential? If you'd like to start a group here at Saddleback, we start groups like this all the time. We've got dozens and dozens of them. In fact, in the last service I mentioned, I'll mention again today, just pull out a blue card, you can write the word group on there, and then you might write down the kind of group you'd like to start. Maybe for a certain profession, or a certain interest, or a certain stage of life, a certain need. Just write down group in that card, and we'll try to get one started. Put it down on a card. We had dozens and dozens come in the last two services. Now, I need to tell you, when we're talking about partnerships, that the Bible seriously warns over and over again about teaming up with people of opposing values. So that's very, very dangerous. Notice this verse. Don't be teamed up with those who do not love the Lord. How can light live with darkness? How can a Christian be a partner with one who doesn't believe? He's saying here, be very, very careful. Don't get stuck in unhealthy relationships. We call that codependency today. If you have a life mission and you're in a partnership with somebody who doesn't accept your life mission but rather has values that oppose it, they will at best resent it and at worst sabotage it. And you just need to be aware of that. Choose your closest relationships. Choose them very, very carefully because they influence your life. And there's a fourth thing you're going to need. You need friends that support me. I need friends that support me. And there are three kinds of encouragement you get from the best kind of friends. First, I need emotional encouragement. They give me emotional encouragement. A true friend is always loyal. And a brother is born to help in time of need. Proverbs 7:17. He's saying here that a true friend walks in when other people walk out. That they stick with you in the crisis. They don't abandon you. And when other people see through you, a friend will see you through. And when you make a mistake and others want to rub it in, a friend rubs it out. They're consistent. They hang in there with you. They give you emotional encouragement. And you're going to need that in your life mission. Number two, we need intellectual encouragement. Intellectual encouragement. Proverbs 27:17 says, as iron sharpens iron, so one man sharpens another. Let me ask you this. Do your closest friends make you think? Or do they just put you to sleep? Oh, let's watch some TV. And eat pretzels. Do your closest friends make you think? Do they stimulate you intellectually? They ought to, or you've got the wrong close friends. Emerson said, a true friend is someone who makes us do what we can do. They stretch you. They press the envelope. They force you to grow. They don't let your brain cells go dead. But they're always in stimulating you intellectually, causing you to be more than you could be otherwise. Iron sharpens iron. True friends stimulate each other intellectually. Notice this verse. He who walks with the wise grows, what? wise, but a companion of fools suffers harm. Now listen, you will never rise above the level of your closest friends. You have a tendency to just hang in there where they are. Birds of a feather flock together. So if you want to soar with the eagles, you can't run with the turkeys. And if you want to be wise, you've got to walk with wise people. You don't hang out with people who are going to do nothing with their life. It's always easier to pull somebody down than it is to pull somebody up. And we tell this to teenagers all the time, choose your friends wisely. But adults need to do it too. Choose your friends wisely. It's always easier to be pulled down than it is to pull somebody up. So he says, we need to build each other up, not hang out with people who don't bring out the best in you. By the way, how do you bring out the best in people? You want to bring out the best in your children? Best in your husband or wife? Best in your employees? Here's how you do it. B-E-S-T. It stands for these letters. You want to bring out the best? You believe in people. Believe in them. You encourage them. You support them. And you trust them. You believe in them. You encourage them. You support them. And you trust them. That's how you bring out the best in people. And then you need spiritual support. Spiritual support. Hebrews 10:25. Let us spur one another on toward love and good deeds. Let us not give up meeting together, but let us encourage one another. We need to get together in church meetings. Of course, this is the best place to do it. Because we spur each other on toward love and good deeds. It motivates us. And you need somebody to pray with you and pray for you, and you need a group of people like this, or a small group. Take class 101 and join our church family and get involved, get in a group where you're stimulated spiritually. Now, if I were to ask you, how many of you would like to have friends that emotionally support you and intellectually stimulate you and spiritually encourage you? How many of you would like to have friends like that? Can I see your hands? Okay. How do you get friends like that? Here's the answer. You get friends like that by being a friend like that. You attract what you are. And if you want to be somebody who's emotionally supported, then you give emotional support. And if you want to be intellectually stimulated, then you need to intellectually stimulate others. And if you want to be spiritually encouraged, you need to spiritually encourage others. Whatever you do will be returned back to you. What you sow, you reap, and you will attract people like what you are. Now, if you're a dud, you're going to attract duds. Just that simple. I know that's real profound, but just remember that. Duds attract duds. People always want to talk about that like in getting married, too. How do I get the right kind of man to marry? How do I get the right kind of woman? You work on becoming the right person, and God will bring the right person along. Don't go out there looking for Mr. Right or Miss Right. You just become that right person. And when you become the right person, God will bring the right person that matches that along. Focus on your own spiritual development. Now, this kind of friendship, I want to tell you, one friend like this is worth 1,000 acquaintances. Because it helps you in your life mission. You cannot fulfill your life mission unless you break off harmful friendships, destructive friendships, and build supporting friendships and relationships. I've asked Bob Bender to come and share his story today about how he's done that and how he's changed from destructive relationships to positive ones and the difference it's made in his life mission. Give him a warm welcome. Great, Bob.
Thank you. I'm a believer who has struggled with codependency for my entire life. Now, for me, basically, codependency is just a nice word for a relationship addict. And the addiction for me has shown itself through a lifetime of unhealthy relationships. These relationships include my parents, my brother and sister, my friends, girlfriends, and also an ex-wife that walked out on me and my son, Mikey. Usually in the relationships, either I attempted to control other people or they tried to control me. And I know for my part, after a few years of working a recovery program, that for me, my part of controlling was attempting to play the martyr. and trying to be somebody that I wasn't and say, look what I've done for you, look what I've sacrificed for you. And I also tried to gain approval of others through my actions. But it still didn't matter what I did. I never really felt good enough or like I was really worth anything. Now, a lot of people laugh if you're familiar with the movie Wayne's World. The two famous theologians, Wayne and Garth, had a little phrase that I thought was pretty hilarious. We're not worthy. We're not worthy. But to be honest with you, that was really how I felt inside about myself. Now, getting back to my ex-wife, that for me was a relationship that, when it failed, motivated me to start taking some action and making some changes in my life. I got involved in a recovery program with Jesus Christ as my higher power. When my wife left, my son was 3. I was almost 23. I was quickly going on 50. I felt like everything that I had counted on for happiness in my life had been taken away. I was alone, then I felt abandoned by everybody, and that includes God. I certainly had no idea what my purpose in life was. And I definitely was surviving day to day. To avoid isolating myself, what I did at that point, God had given me music as a gift, probably my best form of therapy. I became involved in a vocal worship ensemble here at church. And then about 2 years ago, a new ministry started here at church called Celebrate Recovery. Now, I had been involved in recovery programs prior to that point and was really excited to see Saddleback Church taking the lead and getting behind a recovery program. And I was reading the information in the bulletin and preparing myself for the first meeting and just getting ready to come and really looking forward to it. Well, a couple weeks before the meeting started, a good friend of mine that I had met through recovery, he was probably the first healthy relationship I ever had, told me that Pastor John Baker was looking for a worship leader for Celebrate Recovery. And he asked if I would be interested. I was excited, but I was also terrified. I still struggled with the feelings that I just couldn't do it, and I wasn't good enough, and that I wasn't worth putting myself into that. At the same time, I was going to Celebrate Recovery and was participating in the men's codependent group, and fortunately found out that I wasn't the only guy around that had relationship problems, and it wasn't just me. Several of the men from the group that I was involved in went to the men's retreat last November. And while we were up there, Pastor Tom spoke and encouraged us to join accountability groups and become accountable to other men, to other Christian men, about our spiritual growth and about our lives in general. A couple of my friends up there, the three of us got together and decided to become accountability partners. And it was neat for me to be able to see where God was finally starting to help me have healthy relationships in my life. Right about the same time, I got my first sponsor. This for me was a godly man, someone who I could look up to, someone that could be my mentor in life. Not necessarily to do my recovery work for me, but somebody that could encourage me and coach me, somebody who was where I wanted to be and was working what we call in program. I'd say he was working a good program, and I could see he was setting a great example, and I wanted to follow it. I was finally able to start seeing how God was starting to show me some kind of purpose in my life. I went back to my 301 shape profile, dusted it off, had been sitting still for a couple years. And I could see, even a few years ago, I had realized that God was shaping me to be involved in music ministry. And one of my friends and I went up over last Memorial Day weekend. This was one of my accountability partners. Went up to Big Bear, just the two of us, a little man-to-man retreat, time to get away and be alone and just kind of spend some time with each other and with the Lord. And we were sitting up Saturday night, freezing in our sleeping bags in the pitch dark, talking about our goals for our lives. And I revealed to him how I felt like God was telling me it was time to go back to school full-time and that he wanted me to become involved in ministry as an occupation. Of course, I was terrified, and you know, as I've said, I was still dealing with the feelings of insecurity and the fear that I just wasn't good enough and that I wasn't worthy of that calling. When we came back down from the hill, I set up a time with another man that I'd like to look up to as a mentor, someone who's where I want to be in the music ministry, and that's Rick Muchow. And I wanted to meet with him, and we discussed, just to make sure that this was God's will and not Bob's will, which is something I get confused quite a lot. We're still working on finding out where it is God wants me to go. Rick told me I need to lose a little bit more hair to be in the music ministry. Just kidding. But seriously, at this point in my life, I can see that God is helping me to seek out healthy relationships, and it's making a huge difference. I still do attend recovery meetings every week, Friday night, celebrate recovery. And that's basically because I'm human, and I know that for me, I still struggle with insecurity. I still make bad decisions in my relationships sometimes, and I do need God's tool of recovery to help me through that. I also know for me that discovering my life purpose was not possible until I had done a lot of serious work in recovery and gotten rid of a lot of the things in the past that were holding me up. If any of you can relate to that, I invite you to join us here Friday night at 7 o'clock in the tent, and you can watch me fulfill my life mission as I lead the worship, and I appreciate you letting me share.
Now, before we close, I need to say one other thing about relationships that may be difficult for some of you to hear. If you're really serious about living a purpose-driven life, fulfilling your life mission and becoming all that God meant for you to be, you may have to break off some friendships that you have right now that are pulling you the other direction. Because I'd have to say that probably nothing sabotages a life mission as quickly as the wrong friends. When you're headed one direction and they're pulling in another direction, that's chaos. The Bible says it like this. 1 Corinthians 15:33. Don't be misled. Bad company corrupts what? Good character. And one of the reasons why some of you have never fulfilled your life mission, you've never really gone full on with God, is because you're afraid of what it might do to a relationship that you've got. You're afraid that if I really begin to follow God's plan for my life, if I really begin to fulfill my life mission, they may disapprove of it. Or I might even be rejected. Or I might be in real trouble with somebody, and I would lose a friendship or a relationship. And the issue really comes down to this. This is the issue. Do I want to waste my life in order to be popular? That's the bottom line. Do I want to waste my life in order to be popular? Do I care more about somebody else's approval or about God's approval? If you care more about someone else's approval than you do your relationship to God, then that person has become God in your life, and the Bible calls that idolatry. Today we use another word for it. It's called codependency. Bob mentioned it. It's the word that says, I've allowed somebody else to set the goals, ambitions, and purpose of my life rather than God. And that is wrong. It's just dead wrong. It's having some other God before God, and it's a person in that particular instance. Pastor Tom gave me a great illustration right before this service. He said, you know, if you're climbing up a mountain, and you're climbing a mountain with other partners, it really does matter who your friends are, because you're tied to them. And you want to make sure you've got the right kind of friends when you're going up a mountain. Now, it doesn't matter a hill of beans if you're down on the ground who your friends are, because you're not tied to them. But if your life is at stake and you're moving toward a goal, you want to know who you're tied to. And some of you, frankly, need to go home and ask some tough questions like, are my closest friends helping or hindering my life mission? Are my closest friends bringing out the best in me or the worst in me? Are they causing me to grow closer to God, or do they cause me to grow away from God? Listen, anybody who causes you to grow away from God is no friend, regardless of how long you've known them and what you've been through with them. They're no friend if they're drawing you away from God. Jesus once said it like this. He said, you know, sometimes to follow me, a person must give up their father and mother and brother and sister and relationships and friends. to do what I put them on earth in order to do. Your life is too important to waste. So maybe you need to develop some new friendships to replace some that have been pulling you in the opposite direction. Now finally, you have to have the most important relationship of all. And of course, that's your relationship to God. Notice this last verse. Let's read this verse together and we'll close. Romans 5:11. Let's read it. Now we rejoice in our wonderful new relationship with God, all because of what the Lord Jesus Christ has done in dying for our sins, making us friends of God. Circle that last phrase, friends of God. That to me has got to be one of the most mind-blowing concepts around. God wants me to be His friend. He wants you to be His friend. God only knows everything, not only knows everything about you, and He loves you, He wants you to be His friend. Can you imagine that? Oh, yeah, me and God, we're friends. We go way back. Yeah. We're like that, me and God. That's what He says. God says, I don't want you to be afraid of me. I don't want you to run from me. I don't want you to fear me. I want you to be my friend. That is incredible. God knows everything about you, and He still loves you. But He wants you to know Him, and He wants you to love Him, and He made you to have a relationship. If you don't have that down, you need to settle that issue today. In fact, let's just close with a prayer. If you've never settled this issue, why don't you settle this one at least right now? Start with establishing a relationship to God. Let's pray together. Just say this. Dear God, I want a relationship to You. Just say that in your heart. Dear God, I want a relationship to You. I want to become friends with You. And I want You to be my friend through Jesus Christ. I don't understand it all, but I ask You to come into my life and my heart. Help me to get to know You better. I want to follow You and Your plan and purpose for my life. Amen.